have makes me feel so bad. You can fly away in the sky where you're more lucky than me. Wish that I were a yellow bird, I'd fly away with you. But I am not a yellow bird, so here I sit, nothing I can do.
What's up, everyone? How are you all doing? This is DJ Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line. Tune in on Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. I give advice on careers, relationships, friendships, and family. However, I do not, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again, I do not give any legal or medical advice. You know, I'm not a doctor, nor am I a lawyer, nor do I have any desire to go into those types of fields. Not that there's anything wrong with them, I just don't want to go into them. So if you have a legal issue, you really need to contact a professional such as a lawyer, or if you need medical advice, or if you have a medical emergency such as you're having a heart attack or, you know, something like that, please contact your personal doctor or dial 911. So On my last show, I talked a little bit about stress and, you know, something very interesting. I was actually experiencing a lot of stress this weekend because, you know, I had, like, an essay to write and I had to study for a quiz. And to top it all off, mini story before I actually go into my show, mini story, I ended up burning my finger. I've got a blister on it. It's pretty gnarly. But how it happened was I was baking, for the first time ever, a lemon souffle. And I must say, even though it didn't rise properly, it still turned out pretty good. So I'm actually really proud of myself. And I think I'm going to make it for Thanksgiving. But what happened was, after I put in the souffles into the oven, I had forgotten, I don't even know how anyone can do this, but I forgot that the oven, so in the recipe, you're supposed to preheat the oven to 350 degrees, right? So what happened was that I forgot that the oven was on, and I put my finger down onto the oven. And I'm when I say onto the oven, I mean inside the oven. So, I mean, luckily I pulled my finger back very fast for before any, like, serious damage could happen. But yeah, I've got a blister on my finger, so honestly it could have been worse, but I pretty much spent like half the night with my finger in like cold water and like you know, poured aloe vera on it. It was just not fun. It really hurt. So back to my show. So on my last show, like I said before, I talked a little bit about stress, and I would like to continue with that topic for a little bit, because I think it's a very interesting topic. Heck, I think all topics are interesting. There's like a million things I could talk about. As I've said before, stress, it sucks. It really does. And, you know, some types of stress can be good. However, when you're dealing with so much and it's starting to affect your health and, hey, quite possibly your sanity, and you start to think that maybe you should go wear straitjackets or dress code. Quote from Yuzuki Urameshi from Yu Hakusho, great anime, check it out, but that's not important right now. So yeah, if you're experiencing so much stress and you're dealing with so much and it's starting to affect your health and quite possibly your sanity, then yeah, something needs to be done. So without further ado, here's a little bit on how to deal with stress. Well, here's a little bit more on how to deal with stress. I checked out an article on psychcentral.com, and it's titled 10 Practical Ways to Handle Stress. Trust me, even when you're at the end of your rope, there are always ways to deal with something like this. You have a university talking to you, guys. I know about stress. So here are the 10 practical ways to deal with stress. Numero uno, find out where the stress is coming from. In other words, ask yourself this question: what am I stressed about? Is it school, work, family, a relationship? Numero dos, that was like Spanish and French together. Okay, so number two, know what you can control and start with that. There's no point in worrying about something that is out of your control. For example, say your boss is a very disorganized person, and this disorganization has caused you to become stressed. And I'm actually mentioning this example because my boyfriend recently just quit his job. I'm not going to say where he worked, but he quit his job because it was just causing him so much stress because the store that he worked with was actually pretty disorganized. But I'm not going to name the store's name. So yeah, so anyway, and this disorganization has caused you to become stressed because you're worried about how everything will turn out at your job. While working at a store that is disorganized could very well drive any worker crazy, know that what your manager does and how he or she handles things is none of your concern. The best thing for you to do is worry about yourself. Worry about what you can control, like, are you going to meet your sales goal today? Some department stores have sales goals. Are you going to be able to get to work on time? Will you set aside time for yourself to make sure that big project for school is completed? Worry about yourself. There's no point in worrying about something that you can't control, and there's no worrying about what other people are going to do, because other people at your job, they're responsible for themselves. If they don't meet a sales goal, or if they don't get to work on time, or if you see them not doing their job, You know what? Let them take the fall. Let them get fired. It's got nothing to do with you. Sun. And by the way, sun is 3 in Japanese. I have no idea what number is. Do what you love doing. Even if your life is filled with stuff that you have to do, that doesn't mean that you can't find a hobby or an activity that you enjoy doing. There's also nothing wrong with taking a break from homework, a project, or whatever, and going on a long walk to clear your head. I do them all the time. Trust me, last time I checked, computers don't have feet. Your laptop is not going to get up and walk away. Okay, maybe in a science fiction movie it might, but not in real life. When you get back, it'll still be there. I promise. So start filling your life with stuff that you enjoy doing. Number 4, time management. And I swear to God, I hear this word every single day in my house from my parents. Time management, time management, time management. Julia, manage your time. Julia, manage your time. Julia, do this. Julia, do that. So this is like key, you guys. Key. One of the biggest causes of stress for so many people is that they lack enough time to do something. Try setting a time limit per day for how long you work on something. A really good thing to do? Don't wait to work on something at the last minute. Let me put it this way. Say your English teacher assigns you an essay, 8 to 10 pages long, and said essay's due in 2 weeks. The best thing to do when you get home is first have a small break. Get something to eat, drink some water, and if you want to, check your Facebook, play some Candy Crush, flick those angry birds into those green pigs, and do whatever you want. But set a time limit for how long that break is and stick to it. If you have a timer, buying a timer, like an actual timer, really helps with this. After you do that, start working on your essay. Do some research, plan an outline for your first draft. When you work on that essay a little bit every day, it gets less and less stressful as opposed to, waiting until the day before the essay is due. Which reminds me, a word of advice to all you students out there, teachers can tell when you haven't put in the time and effort into something. So if you really think that you can write an 8 to 10 page essay in just 24 hours and think that the teacher won't notice, stop thinking that. They will be able to tell. And actually, I had a friend who used to go to UC Santa Cruz. And the difference, I mean, she and I both procrastinate on our work a lot. And yes, this is another mini story dealing with the whole waiting until the last minute thing. She and I do procrastinate on things a lot, but there's a difference between us. And this is her. Okay, I'm going to get it done. 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 Okay, I'm definitely going to get it done. Okay, I'm seriously going to get it done this time. And then it's like, crud, I only have 2 hours to get it done. Whereas this is me. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get it done. Okay, I'm really sick and tired of saying I'm going to get it done. I'm going to go get it done. And it's done. Number 5. This one is interesting. Build a toolbox of techniques. Remember, not all stress-relieving activities can help you with everything. And everyone, and, you know, there are many different stress activities to help different people. What works for one person may not work for you. What you can do, however, is come up with a toolbox that has techniques that do help you. These can include deep breathing exercises such as meditation and yoga, learning to handle and manage what causes you to be stressed, and finding more ways to be organized. Number 6. I kind of have to quote this one because I don't think there's any other way to say it. Pick up the negotiables from your plate. Find the stuff that you really don't need to do and get rid of it. For example, as mentioned in the article, are you volunteering for too many causes? If so, what causes do you enjoy doing? And what causes are you doing only because you feel you have to? No one will hold it against you for leaving a cause in order to take care of yourself. Remember, if you want to take care of another person, or you need to take care of yourself first. Reducing the number of tasks that you have, if you're able to, can reduce your level of stress. Number 7. Are you letting yourself be kicked in the butt by stress? Because if you are, stop it. Actually, you know what? Repeat after me. Seriously, repeat after me right now. Stress does not rule me. I rule stress. But seriously, do you find that you are vulnerable to stress? For example, say you were not getting enough sleep, like you only got 2 hours of sleep last night. And actually, I heard somewhere, I'm not sure if this is true or not, but I heard somewhere that if you don't get any sleep for like 3 days straight, I heard some of that means that you are clinically insane. I'm gonna have to look that up sometime. Anyway, you can pump your body with all the caffeine you want. You can pay for those extra shots of espresso in your coffee. You can make all the trips to Starbucks or Pete's Coffee that you want. But when you're sleep deprived, even the smallest and most trivial thing can end up having a big impact. Number 8, preserve good boundaries. That would be the article's words, by the way, not mine. Surround yourself with positive thinking people. Other ways to preserve good boundaries are set limits, be direct, recognize your emotions. That means recognize when you're angry and da-da-da-da-da, and also recognize that your emotions are your own and you're responsible for your emotions. Don't take them out on other people. And make taking care of yourself a priority. Number 9, know that there is a difference between worrying and caring. Clinical psychologist Chad Lejeune, PhD, talks about the idea of worrying versus caring in his book, The Worry Trap. How to free yourself from worry and anxiety using acceptance and commitment therapy. Worrying is an attempt to exert control over the future by thinking about it, whereas caring is taking action. When we are caring for someone or something, we do the things that support or advance the best interests of the person or thing that we care about. Also mentioned in the article, doing something like getting worried about your finances does nothing whatsoever except get you all worked up, and that can very possibly reduce your chances for taking action. While it's human nature to worry about something, worrying won't get you anywhere. Don't worry about what needs to be done, just do it. And finally, number 10, realize that it is okay to make mistakes. Nobody is born automatically knowing how to do something. I mean, I make tons of mistakes every day. Making mistakes actually increases your growth because every time you make a mistake on something, you learn something new. Another thing I would like to talk about, and this one is the career section of my show, how to deal with customers. Whether you love them or hate them, they can drive you insane. I myself have run into some pretty rude people while working in retail, but at the same time, I've also run into some people who are actually very nice. And as much as I wanted to strangle those really rude people, I knew that if I wanted to keep my job, I could not go ahead with such an action. But let me be clear to you guys that I'm not a violent person. So, without further ado, here is some advice for how to deal with rude and angry customers. Forbes.com has an article called 7 Steps for Dealing with Angry Customers. However, I will admit that if I wrote that article, I would have titled it, "Don't Strangle That Customer, You Need That Job of Yours." Number 1. Number 1. Remain calm. Even if a customer is being rude, obnoxious, and giving you attitude, look, I get the desire to want to wrap your hands around their neck and strangle them, but do not lose your cool. When you lose your cool, you put your job and likely reputation at risk. You have nothing to gain when you act in the same manner as your customer is acting. Many customers can and do say very nasty and degrading things. don't let it get to you. Save that frustration for when you're alone or with friends. Number two, don't take what they say personally. If they are displeased with the product, that does not in any way mean that they are unsatisfied with you. Your personal feelings in the situation, while they matter to you, have nothing to do with the said situation. Number three, listen to what they have to say, even if it does come off as completely ridiculous. Many customers love to vent, and when they do, they want someone to listen. And whether you want to or not, sorry, you're that person. Number four, sympathize with them. Tell the customer that you totally understand where they are coming from, even if you don't. Maybe even offer brief life experience where you're in the same situation, how you dealt with it. As much as you may or may not want to roll your eyes, don't do it. Number five, apologize politely, even when it's not your fault. There's no point in getting defensive, as getting defensive will just create more problems. Whether the customer's complaint is fair or not doesn't matter one little bit. It's still the customer. You need to treat them with respect. Number six, find a solution. Once the problem has been discovered and an apology has been made, find out ways to fix the problem. And number seven, take a time out for yourself. A small one, though. Even if the situation was handled correctly and with a positive outcome, it's still a stressful situation, nonetheless. So give yourself time to breathe. So, what are other ways to deal with customers? Mini story. I remember one time, and I won't say where I worked, once again, but one of my coworkers was pregnant and just getting, this was back in my community college days. This was back in like 2008, 2009, so yeah, long time ago. But one of my coworkers was pregnant and just getting ready to go on maternity leave. I think at the time she was like 6 or 7 months pregnant. She was really starting to show. So she and I had just got done taking care of a couple of customers, a couple of guys, and on their way out, do you want to know what they said to her? Hey, don't bust open on the job. I won't even repeat what I wanted to say for various reasons, but I thought the comment alone was just, that was just beyond rude. Which brings me to how to handle a rude and annoying customer without flying off the handle. Or hitting the customer with a broom handle. Or hitting the customer in general. Oh, you get the idea. Yahoo Voices gives a bit of the article on this, titled, How to Deal with Rude Customers. With customers, you get the negative and the positive. You'll get those who are friendly, and then you get those who will throw you under the bus, and they're the ones driving the bus. And, like I said before, dealing with customers, oh boy. You have to stand there and smile while someone is insulting you, and you have to keep smiling and being friendly no matter what. It's very hard. It's very hard. Why is it hard? Because that customer is the key to a business thriving. Without the customer, there basically is no business. Oh sure, you can have as many amazing employees as you want, but without income, the business fails. So, the best way to deal with a rude customer? Kill them with kindness! And just like that photo seen on Facebook and various websites, no, you cannot name a knife kindness and use that on the customer. The whole point of killing a customer with kindness is that you want to, and I quote, rise above the situation. Remember what I said earlier. Just because a customer is being rude to you does not mean that you should be rude back. Customers are more likely to change their attitude if you at least pretend to show that you are, provided you have good acting skills, and become slightly more positive themselves, providing them with a reaction. Providing them with a reaction is not only allowing them to have, is only allowing them to have power over you. Another article I came across was from CustomerServiceZone.com, and it's called Dealing with Difficult Customers, Angry Customers, and Just Plain Rude Customers. For many people, they would actually like their job if it wasn't for the customer. So according to the article, why are some customers rude and downright difficult and obnoxious? The answer is simple. There's no real answer except that they're humans, and that it is human nature to be absolutely wonderful or absolutely annoying. Actually, now that I think about it, the article tackles questions that have been asked by many employees. Here's one of my favorites. Why does the customer pick on me when I don't make the rules? I personally remember one time a customer got mad at me for the fact that the drink I was making them, and it was non-alcoholic by the way, was too pricey. Now, what was I thinking? This is what I was thinking. Lady, you have in your hand an iPhone, you are carrying a Prada bag, you're wearing Gucci shoes, your sunglasses are obviously Versace, and I'm not even kidding you guys, she had designer brands all over her. She looked like a walking department store, all of which cost hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and you're complaining about a cup of tea costing $5? And I'm not the one who sets the prices, I just sell and make the tea. Angry customers do, in a way, understand that you can only do what your job requires you to do, and you're not some miracle worker. So, why do they pick on you for stuff that's out of your control? To make your life miserable? Well, the answer to that is no. The whole thing has nothing to do with you personally. Even if the customer is attacking you on a personal level, they're mainly only doing so because they're frustrated about something. Customers, as I've said before, often just need to vent. And if you're around, chances are you'll be playing therapist for a few minutes. So, once again, what's the best way to handle these types of customers? Don't take what they say personally and continue to do your job to the best of your ability. However, what you should do in the case of the customer is completely draining you and you are starting to feel that you are losing your patience, what do you do when you are dealing with a customer that is being so rude even beyond the standards of what is considered normal? As tempting as a verbal beatdown may sound, don't do it. Instead, politely and promptly excuse yourself. Tell the customer that you are going to ask a manager to deal with the issue. When you see your manager, tell them why you need their help and that you are having trouble meeting the customer's needs and why. There's nothing wrong with going to your manager for help when you're in a sticky situation. We are going to take a quick break. This is DJ Desert Rose and you are listening to Drawing the Line only on radio.dominican.edu.
It hurts so bad when you finally know just how low, 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 low shit. Baby, it's a bad, bad thing. Baby, it's a bad, bad thing. Baby, it's a bad, bad thing. And I feel like crying. I feel like crying.
Whoa, Lord, I got to keep on moving. Lord, I got to get on down. Lord, I've got to keep on grooving. Where I can be, where I can be found. Lord, they're gunning after me.
Welcome back, everybody. So, the next topic that I would like to discuss, and this is something that everyone can relate to, how to deal with breakups or how to go about breaking up with someone. First of all, there's... There's no easy way to break up with someone, because breakups aren't easy in the first place. Someone always gets hurt, no matter how you go about it. First off, I'm going to talk about the best way to go about a breakup. Breakups happen for a reason. Whether you're unhappy with the relationship itself, or you just no longer love the person you were with, breakups aren't done just because. When you break up with someone, here's how it really should be done. But before that, just what are some of the warning signs that a breakup is about to take place? Psychology Today lists 7 signs in their article, 7 Signs You're Headed for a Breakup. And they are, number 1, you and your partner are spending a significant amount of time apart. While it is healthy for couples to want and need time away from each other, and that's actually a good thing, spending little to no time with each other can prove to be a problem. Number 2, your beliefs have grown to be vastly different. It's no doubt that people change, and sometimes that change can greatly impact your relationship. While it is good to have difference in a relationship, as this tends to spice it up a bit more, having too many differences can also impact your relationship. Number 3, you feel more like yourself when you're not around your partner. While enjoying solitude is fine, thinking that it's a darn good thing they aren't around you for a specific amount of time is not a good thing. Number 4. Your conversations have hit an all-time low level of boring. Successful relationships thrive on good communication. Number 5. You begin to realize that you and your partner haven't been having sex for a long time. Not everybody wants sex at every waking moment, and not having sex every day is not a bad thing. Sometimes you want it, and sometimes you don't. But a complete lack of physical activity? No bueno. Number 6. Discussions have turned into full-blown arguments. What was once upon a time a friendly conversations have turned into a full-on scream fest. When you scream at someone, that someone cannot hear what you are saying and are less inclined to feel that they need to listen to you. But let's get one thing straight. Arguments are normal in a relationship. They happen to everybody. Even married couples who have been married for 50 years fight every now and then. And arguing is actually seen as a healthy thing because it's healthier to let your frustrations out rather than keep all that anger bottled up. It's when you're constantly fighting over and over again, that's when it's a problem. As the article states, if you can't agree to disagree, it's time to evaluate your relationship. And finally, number 7, you and your partner have begun to hate each other. Not in the sense of you're really annoying me right now, but in the sense of I never want to see you again and I cannot even stand the sight of you right now. You even end up hating the way they do things, such as how they hold their fork. Sounds stupid, but it's happened. And if you and your partner have reached that stage and you two can truly no longer stand to be around one another, let alone look at each other, then do yourselves a favor and end it. After all that, what are the best ways to perform a breakup? First off, do the breakup in person, face to face. Phone conversations are okay too in certain cases, but face-to-face, while the hardest, is the best way. Doing a breakup face-to-face tells the person whom you're ending a relationship that you at least care enough about them and their feelings to grant them that courtesy. There is, after all, nothing more insulting than a breakup through a Facebook chat, email, sticky note to the door, and I actually know someone who had this happen to them, or a text. Second, be completely honest with the person you're breaking up with, but still keep their feelings into consideration. The breakup's hard for you, but keep in mind that they're going to have a difficult time hearing it as well. Tell them why you're breaking up with them. WebMD gives an article called How to Break Up Gracefully. And not surprisingly, people have different methods on how they handle or perform a breakup. The nature of how to handle a breakup has to do with how you experience a relationship, says New York City-based psychoanalyst and psychotherapist Janice Lieberman, PhD, who specializes in relationship issues. Furthermore, Lieberman also states that there are no rules written in stone regarding a breakup or relationships in general. She says, and once again, I quote, "There are people who think they have a relationship with 2 dates and people don't think they're in a relationship after 20 dates. If you have gone on 1 or 2 or 3 dates, not calling is breaking up. But after some kind of romantic and sexual encounters, it is a courtesy to call. Sometimes it's easier not to call, and there are people who will just run away. Remember when I said not to break up over an email? Well, WebMD gives a more specific explanation. A site called Breakup Butler is mentioned. I myself found this very interesting, and I went to visit the site myself. It's actually called Humor Hotlines, where the Breakup Butler has numerous pre-recorded messages that you can deliver to your partner to let them know that it is over. However, I have a feeling that breaking up with your partner in that way is probably more likely to get you slapped than anything else. But why should you not break up with someone over email? Allison Arnold, PhD, a therapist and a life coach on VH1 series Scott Baio is Single and 45, states that the news of a breakup should never be broken over text or email, and that texting a breakup is the coward's way out. Also, another do not do this whatsoever, breakup sex. Sex in a relationship should, but not always does, represent that you two love each other deeply. It is a very intimate and emotional thing. So for the love of God, why would you make the breakup harder than it already is? Do you really want to officially end the relationship on a, okay, that was a nice goodbye note? Now, how do you deal with a breakup? When it first happens, don't expect that it's going to be easy to handle, or that even if you expect it to happen, or that you already have a suave reaction played out in your head, because how you think it'll happen is way different from how it'll actually happen. When your partner is breaking up with you, don't be afraid to ask questions like why. Even if your partner's mind is already made up, you still deserve to know why. And it's okay to cry during and after the breakup. After all is said and done, give yourself time to heal and acknowledge that you are hurting. It's okay to feel things like anger, confusion, sadness, hurt, and frustration. You need to let yourself feel those things. Don't fight them, welcome them. And because breakups are hard, you don't have to go about it alone. Seek support from family and friends. Spend time with those who will surround you with the support that you need at this very difficult time. But before you do that, grant yourself some alone time. And while the healing process, may be difficult, realize that breakups are not the end of the world. Just because you lost one person does not in any way mean you have lost yourself or your life. But also realize that eventually you will have to get over it and move on. While it's okay to cry and feel what you need to feel, constantly dwelling on the issue is not going to change the outcome. I'm not trying to sound harsh, but it's true. It'll do you no good to be stuck in the same position for an unusually long amount of time. After all, what's done is done. And in so many cases, there's no going back. And also, sometimes it's best to be single for a bit after a relationship. Like I said, you need to give yourself time to heal. Don't enter a relationship on the sole basis that you need a shoulder to cry on, or that you need your own personal therapist, someone to vent, rant, and wave to. It's not fair to either of you, and while the person you are getting into a relationship may not have a problem with listening to you talk about it, you know, every once in a while, they don't want to hear about it every day. They don't want to hear how badly your partner hurt you. They don't want to hear you compare the things that they do to what your partner used to do. They sympathize with you, but they want to enter a relationship with you on a fresh and positive note, not while you're still getting over your last relationship. Getting into a relationship while you're still getting over one won't work out. You can't completely subject your pain on another person and expect them to be happy, and expect them to make you happy. Happiness comes from within. Only you can make yourself happy. When you find true happiness within yourself, then you're all set to go. A quick break here. This is DJ Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line, only on radio.dominican.edu.
So alone.
I was going through a really difficult time.
I didn't want to bother anyone.
I didn't think it would end again.
It was tough at first, but I did it. I'm glad I asked for help.
I asked my teacher.
I asked my dad. Do this.
Whatever it is, ask for help.
If you're thinking about suicide, you need support. Call the Trevor Lifeline. Trained counselors are there to help 24/7.
This friendly neighborhood is quiet. That's just one reason why Delissa Conley loves living here. But on Monday, she saw a part of the neighborhood she now hates. Conley was leaving her home when she noticed a 12-year-old girl outside in a diaper.
She looked like she was scared and like she had been crying for some reason.
Police say the girl's mother, Megan Britton, and her stepfather, Darnell Landrum, are behind the hilarious act. According to a criminal complaint, the parents made the girl put on the diaper as punishment.
The girl was forced to run several times between the basketball court and home. Her mother later told police that she was simply trying to discipline her daughter by embarrassing her and getting bad grades.
More than 30 people saw the girl run. Many of them called her mom. Conley says she has never seen anything like this before. Both parents could face up to a year in prison.
I was searching for my
authorities
past.
Say neither seem remorseful.
The strangest and most disturbing part
wherever thou fallest, I would go.
When he contacted the police officer that night,
the greatest thing is to know my
mother and stepfather were on a tour.
My people and my people.
are back. So now, I'd like to give all you parents out there a little advice on something. Something that makes you want to tear your hair out and scream at the top of your lungs. Something that makes you want to run for the hills. Disobedient children. Now, for the record, disobedient children is nothing out of the ordinary. As children grow up, they also learn that what they like, what they don't like, and just what makes them downright mad. And kids, hey, are not afraid to show it. Many a time as a child has said no to their parents more than a child has said yes. Parents love their kids, it's true. It's those temper tantrums and scream fests that parents hate. Often a time, a child's vocabulary will consist of no, mine, make me, and I don't want to. Tis why I don't have children at my age. And no, I'm not bashing young mothers. I'm not about to judge someone who had a kid at a young age. I'm just saying that I don't want a kid right now. But just how does a parent deal with a disobedient child? And no, shoving the kid in a box and shipping him off to Timbuktu is not okay. And I'm pretty sure there is a law against sending live children through the mail, no matter how many postage and do not return to sender stamps you put on said box. ABC News gives very helpful tips on how to go about this. Well, actually, ABC features an article called Top 10 Tips for Handling a Defiant Child, where Dr. Alex Kasdan of Yale University Parenting and Child Conduct Clinic offers those 10 tips. Here are those 10 magical tips. Notice good behavior and good attention to it. When a child does something good, like put away his or her toys, let them know that they did a good job. Number two, when you do give positive attention, it can be a pat on the back or a high five. Even a simple affectionate gesture can go a long way. Number three, instead of using words like stop or don't or the deeply overused because I said so and the child presents unacceptable behavior, use words like please and thank you. So instead of saying don't leave your shoes in the doorway, say please put your shoes in the closet. Number four, be enthusiastic when you let them know they've done a good job. Number five, reward the kid when they do something when you ask and make a game out of it, like turn cleaning the room into a little racing game or set up a point system. If the kid doesn't do what you ask, let them know that they don't get a point and that you and your child will try again later. Number six, when you give an instruction, only do it once. Yes, parents do use repetition, but focusing on defiant behavior only increases defiant behavior. Number seven, don't pay attention to or give in to annoying behavior. Learn to walk away. When you stop paying attention to a child who is badgering you for that new toy or that chocolate bar that you saw in the candy aisle, even though God forbid you ever give a little kid candy, they're already pumped up on enough metaphorical sugar and caffeine as it is, it doesn't benefit the child in any way, and they do see it. If the child starts to throw a tantrum, try to do something to take their mind off it. Give them a snack or a toy, or play a game with them. But if you're scot-free of all of that, let the child know that their behavior is not okay, but do it in a calm manner, and if they continue in you, you will take them back to the car. If the child does not obey, take him back to the car, tell him why what he's doing is not okay, and sit with him until he calms down. Number eight. This goes back to the whole tantrum thing. While nobody likes being subjected to a child screaming over something that they want but can't have, and this won't drive anyone crazy than the parent who is with that kid, it is important to stay calm yourself. Number nine, longer and harsher punishments don't work. If a child refuses to do a timeout, then take away a toy or a privilege for a certain amount of time. For example, if a child does not want to do a timeout, then tell them that's fine, but then no TV for a week. And number 10, number 1, 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 number 1. Or as the article put it, put number 1 into practice. Parents should always reward good behavior because it brings out positive behavior in the child. Child parenting from about.com is another site that gives good tips. And by the way, about.com has like a department store and then some on topics, but I'm not here to discuss the site's layouts with you. How does a parent manage defiant behavior? Get to the root of the problem. Look for signs and triggers that might be setting the kid off, and notice if there is some kind of pattern. Also, and I personally think that this is a huge one, and I stand by it all the way, you cannot expect your child to respect you if you do not treat them with respect. Remember, although you are the parent and an authority figure, your kid has feelings too and wants you to acknowledge them. So treat your child the way you want to be treated. Establishing ground rules is also a great way to manage defiance. Let your child know certain things that he or she cannot do and what the consequences will be if they disobey you. For example, please do not jump on the couch. If I catch you doing that, you get no dessert after dinner tonight. The key to discipline, following through on what you say. In many, many cases, the term talk is cheap rings true. If you don't follow through on what you say, the child will not take you seriously. Children know when they can take advantage of a wishy-washy parent. Now, and this fits into defiant behavior, how do you deal with a child who talks back to you? Every parent knows just how annoying and frustrating that is. When your child is talking back, once again, it is important to stay calm. Easier said than done, I get it, but it's very important that you do this. If the kid uses the famous, "You're not the boss of me," tell them that you are, in fact, the boss of them. Let them know that you are in control, but do it in a calm demeanor. When a child does begin to talk back to you, remind yourself that this is normal. This is a part of a child growing up. This is to be expected. However, disrespectful behavior should be taken care of. Discipline is about teaching the child, helping them grow, and preparing them for the world. Discipline is not about punishment or belittling the child. I've said in one of my shows that harsh words can do a lot of damage to a kid. Emotional and verbal abuse is still abuse. Very few parents can say that they haven't lost their cool. Even loving, patient parents can sometimes lose their temper. It's perfectly normal to send a child to their room when they've hit a younger sibling or, and this has happened, hit you. It is not okay to belittle that child or make the child feel like they're worthless, unloved, or unwanted. Raising a child is one of the most difficult jobs anyone can have, but you learn to take the good, the bad, and the ugly as it comes, and trust me, they do come. Just remember, being married or having lots of money or a nice house, none of those things makes one a parent. It's how you handle, treat, and take care of your child that does. Losing your cool is normal. Insulting the child is not okay, and it never will be okay. When you yell, scream, put your child down by insulting them and calling them names, they end up believing that your actions are normal and that it's okay to scream and hurt people to get what they want. It's not. Another form of parental discipline that doesn't work? Embarrassing your child or breaking your child's things. Has anybody seen the video on YouTube? It's called Father Shoots Daughter's Laptop. I won't play the video because that has some very rude language, but in it, a father is reading off a letter that his daughter posts on Facebook where she complains about how many chores she has to do while calling her parents lazy. While I'm going to say and she also used a very colorful language, what I'm about to say should be considered both good advice and could be considered with both good advice and bad advice. If you're going to say bad things about your parents, keep them to yourself. As in, don't repeat to your parents what you really think of them in that moment. And if you can't keep it to yourself, write it down in a journal or a diary. But do not post on Facebook where everyone can see it. You're bound to get caught eventually. But What happens is that the dad ends up shooting his daughter's laptop. This video sparked, I'm serious, he put at least 6 rounds into that thing. I'm not even kidding you. This video actually sparked a lot of attention from other news shows, and YouTubers from all over posted their reactions to it. I have to admit that when I saw it, I started laughing very hard. I thought it was funny, not because I agreed with what the father was doing. My reaction was more along the lines of, wow, did he really just do that? And this little story brings me to my next topic, why using embarrassment as discipline doesn't work. I guess you could say that this is another one of those parent-child relationship kind of things. Shame and embarrassment are not effective forms of discipline and may just end up causing more harm than good. Life Science gives its own 2 cents. It's an article titled, Embarrassing Punishments Hurts Kids, Experts Say. Here's a shocker. Parents were so disappointed with their daughter's grades that their kid, who was 12 at the time, by the way, they shaved her head and then made her run outside in a diaper. Okay, yeah, I just found an article on it, and I'm going to read a bit from it so you guys know what happened. So it says in the article, and this is from, let me read it. WCH6.com, and it's titled, Parents Charge After Shaving 12-Year-Old Daughter's Head. And it says, a Minnesota couple is facing charges after allegedly shaving their 12-year-old daughter's head and forcing her to run up and down the street in a diaper. And police arrived. Monday. I'm going to check the date on this. But yeah, police arrived at the house of the parents. And they found out that the kid was standing outside for at least half an hour. Like, I still can't believe that these parents actually shaved their 12-year-old daughter's head and made her run outside in a diaper. And the reason why was because she was getting bad grades. And one question, the mother of the kid said that she didn't think that there was anything wrong and that she told the daughter that if her kid did not bring home good grades and still acted out in school, then there would be a punishment, aka the 12-year-old would have her head shaven. Now, I did say that when you discipline a kid, you need to follow through on that, but when you discipline your kid, don't cause them psychological damage. However, this form of discipline has happened more than once. Why can't I get over the fact that that these people actually shaved their daughter's head and made her run outside in a diaper when she was 12 years old? I really hope that they went to jail. I really do, because I would definitely call that child abuse. And Heather here, DJ May, she totally agrees with me. Anyway, so the idea of embarrassing your children to get them to do it, them to learn or obey you, However, this form of discipline has happened more than once. That is embarrassment. The idea of embarrassing your children to get them to do what you learn or obey you, that is. But why is this form of discipline so bad? Well, parents, I mean, let's face it. There's a difference between embarrassing your child and embarrassing your child. Back to Life Science. Experts say that extreme cases of discipline, such as embarrassment, may cause long-term psychological damage. What's more, odd punishments can make a child an easier target for bullying. And we're going to pick up on this topic next time, along with how to handle a mean girl. Hope you guys had a good time. This is DJ Desert Rose. Tune into my show, Drawing the Line, from 1 to 2 p.m., only on radio.dominican.edu.